is our third day, third full day of session. And welcome to Dino, and James and Eva, who arrived yesterday. We've got an empty seat for Thomas, so he didn't make it. Hope he's all right. I'm sure he is. today's basically our last full day of session. I've got around another 24 hours to go. And it's about like a long distance race. Three or four days of consistent effort. The end is in sight, but let that not be a hindrance to you. Like more of an encouragement. So today I wanted to talk about a koan. This one's from the Blue Cliff Record, which is the third book which I talked about. So there was a koan on Thursday that was from the Mumon Kun, or the Gateless Gate. Then there's a koan yesterday from the Shoyoroku, the Blue Cliff Record. And this one's, Book of Equanimity, and this one's from the Blue Cliff Record. So-called, it's the 100 case koans in this, and so-called, I think, because the master who gathered these 100 koans lived at the foot of the Hikigan, the Blue Cliff. I guess the cliff looks blue. So it's also called the Blue Rock Record or the Blue Cliff Record. And this one's about a hermit. And it's called "The Hermit of Lodge's Flower Peak Holds Up His Staff." So again, this this has a pointer, like an introduction, and the main case. It's also got a verse, but I won't read the verse because the verse is really full of Chinese allusions in that. And it's I'll leave the verse off. So the introduction, the pointer. And the pointer kind of points to what the koan is about. If your potential does not leave its fixed position, you tumble down into the poisonous sea. If your words don't startle the crowd, you fall into the streams of the commonplace. Suddenly, if you can distinguish initiate from lay in the light of sparks struck from stone, if you can decide between killing and giving light in the flash of a flash of lightning, then you can cut off the 10 directions and tower up like a 1,000-fathom wall. But do you know that such a time exists? To test this, I'm citing this old case. Look. So the case, the koan. The hermit of Lotus Flower Peak held up his staff and showed it to the assembly, saying, "When the ancients got here, Why didn't they stay?" There was no answer from the assembly, so he himself answered for them. "Because they did not gain strength on the road, or because it has no strength for the way." Again he said, "At the end of the day, what's it like?" And again he himself answered in their place, "With my staff across my shoulder, I pay no heed to people, I go straight into the myriad peaks." So this koan's about the hermit who lives on Lotus Flower Peak, which is on Mount Tiantai, which is one of the famous spiritual mountains in China. And he's what they call an adept. So an adept is like someone who's completed, I guess, formal training at a temple or a centre, and then a lot of the training after the after you finish your formal training, you go out into the hills and find yourself a hut and live there for a while. So the little commentary on this is, which is from the about the 9th century, says, "Can you all judge the hermit of Lotus Flower Peak? His feet still aren't touching the ground. Early in some times, he built a hut on Tiantai's Lotus Flower Peak. After they had attained the path, the ancients would dwell in thatched huts or stone grottos, boiling the roots of wild greens in broken-legged pots, passing the days. They didn't seek fame and fortune, unconcerned, they accorded to conditions. They would impart a turning word here and there, wanting to repay the benevolence of the Buddhas and the ancestors and transmit the Buddha mind seal. As soon as he saw a monk coming, this hermit would hold up his staff and say, "When the ancients got here, why didn't they consent to stay?" Now, for more than 20 years, there was never even one person who could answer this. He says, "But tell me, why did he ask the same question for 20 years? Since this is the action of a master of this school, that's our school, our Zen school, why did he just keep to one peg, just this one thing?" So during the course of 20 years, there are quite a few people who laid out their remarks to the hermit to present their views, trying all their clever devices. But even if someone could speak of it, still they could not reach the place of the hermit's point. So it's interesting, so he says that. So he's actually spending 20 years by himself as a hermit. 20 years, an awful long time. I guess he probably carried on. And so this hermit's like living alone in some kind of remote place in the woods. And you know, I guess if you kind of think about the tradition of most religions, they have you know, contemplatives or people who either live in monasteries by themselves or potentially in silence, in some of the Catholic orders, or out by themselves in the woods, I guess they were, or in the deserts, the desert fathers or the Essenes. And so there's kind of a certain practice where people remove themselves from society and to do their own work, whatever their tradition is. And and then there's people like the hermit who actually lives by himself in a thatched hut, boiling the roots of wild greens and broken-legged pots, passing the days, not seeking fame and fortune. It takes a special kind of person, really, to do that. You know? And in the Buddhism, I guess, I think it's from the Tibetan tradition, they describe five Buddha families. And we all kind of fall into one or the other of these particular Buddha families, but we also rotate between them. And they're the... they're called the Buddha. The Buddha families, first ones are Buddha, Ratna, Vajra, Karma, and Padma. And these correspond to different aspects. So the Ratna are people who are, I guess, concerned with making a livelihood. And these are all kind of, when we talk about right livelihoods, so these are people who work in, I guess that's their main thing, is about creating a living. Vajra is about people who have intellect or study and are very smart people. You use their minds well. Karma is about, you know, and karma just means action. So, and this is in case of like social action. So people who have that bent. And Padma is about relationship and passion. So that's about, I guess, people who, like social workers, those kind of people. And the Buddha family is about those who like to go off into stone grottos and thatched huts and boil the roots of wild greens and broken-legged pots. And we're kind of doing that to a certain extent here. I guess it's got a bit more than wild greens and broken-legged pots, but there's obviously a time, you know, time and a place to withdraw ourselves from the hubbub of life. And so this hermit is a being sought out by people too. And there's lots of stories like that in the Zen literature too, of you know, of people living on mountains and then being sought out. And there's even cases like Bodhidharma, who sat by himself at Shaolin Monastery or in a cave somewhere for 9 years, and nobody turned up for 9 years until Ekka turned up and demanded an audience. And sometimes I feel like these kind of stories are interesting, because if you really think about the heart of these people, why do you think they're living in caves? You know, and that, I think it's because they like to live in caves. They're not really social people. You know, if you were in the Padma family or that relationship, you'd be down there at the Rokan Monastery or wherever. You wouldn't be up in a cave somewhere. So these are a certain kind of personality type. And you know, there's another case of another teacher who I think lived on top of a mountain for 9 years, but he was kind of waiting the whole time for people to turn up. And he got quite lonely, and eventually he thought, "Oh, wait at this. No one's coming, I'm going down the hill." And then he was confronted by two tigers, and the tigers said, "You should wait a little while longer. And you don't argue with tigers." So he ran back on top of the hill, and then the next day a couple of monks turned up, and then a few more, and at the end of the day there were like a thousand monks living there. So, but I guess for ourselves, you know, there's always a kind of time that helps us to, you know, to withdraw, and we're really doing that, doing this over session too. At the time when we come and take the place of this hermit. And it's interesting too, I think, kind of thinking about when we come here, like, you know, when I was leaving, one of my colleagues said, "Oh, have a nice time on session," and she said, "Oh, 4 days in silence, like, that would just be hell for me." And it can be hell. I guess if you're really used to communicating. But actually it's quite sweet after a while. You realize if your life's real busy, that actually don't need to do all those. And one of our, you know, instructions is around, you know, we don't need to do social greetings, because the amount of time we take to create ourselves is takes a bit of effort, so actually you're able to drop it here. And then also that need to be acknowledged or affirmed is quite, you know, quite strong. You know, the need for fame or gain or acknowledgement. I think it's also kind of reflect on the need to be needed, the need to be of use is a strong one. You know, it's like if you kind of look at how you manifest in your life through service, you know, whether it's your service through the kind of work you do or volunteer activity or family or friends, or you know, there's always some kind of a service that that we're giving, and there's almost like a need for us to assist. And some of us I guess some of us might take this up as a whole occupation in itself, but it's interesting I kind of look at that, you know, as you kind of get older, there's also a sense of having, as Saint Peter said toward the end of his life, he said, "I have run the good race to its end. You know, there's now a place reserved for me in the kingdom of heaven." And in a way, I kind of think that kind of thing of age is like you've also felt that you've kind of done your bit. And in a sense, it could be a little bit like this hermit has done all this work and he's retired. And that's true to a certain extent, but here he is, you know, it's like he's he's giving a teaching here. Yeah. On the other side of that, we have someone who, like, you know, personified as, you know, some of our politicians, or probably Donald Trump's probably the greatest gift to mankind, really. He's like a greatest gift to Twitter anyway. And to and the media. But it's like iconically a person who needs to be acknowledged. You know, he's got this kind of desire to be verified, and it's kind of a beautiful icon for us. You know, it's got some negative stuff to it too, but it's like just as an iconic person to. And so this hermit obviously is in a place where there's no need for acknowledgement. So, but he is. Paying back anyone who turns up, he presents something, and that's his work. And he's also providing this, I guess, iconic opposite to someone like Donald Trump. Is that his place there? I think is really important too, as an icon, a kind of a placeholder for this kind of life or this kind of approach. You know, I always think about the that people who kind of hold positions, and even just that you think of our lineage down through the years that we chant is that, like, those people there hold a very kind of iconic place or an example for us to I guess aspire to a certain aspect of our personality that we don't totally need to engage with ourselves, but it's there, it's still there for us. And so this so the hermit, people turn up, and he holds up a staff. Now, staffs, a bit about the staff, this is a very short staff, not much of a staff, but it's actually made from a manzanita bush, which is the kind of low scrub that grows around in the Southern California mountains. And it has this beautiful red bark on it, and it's almost like you wander around in the bright California sun, and it's just this deep, rich bark that's glowing and glistening in the sun. It's amazing stuff. And so the staff, this was cut by a friend of mine there, and it's kind of a short, we call this a short staff. It's short. And then when you kind of complete your training in the transmission ceremony, you also get a long staff, which is about a 6 foot or a 7 foot staff. It's kind of a long one. That's typically cut from the trees around the mountain that your training center is on, like from a telegraph pole if it's in the city. And then, but I couldn't bring it back from the States because it was too long. You know, I wouldn't get it through, and then I don't know what they do at customs. They fumigate it. But anyway, it's waiting way too long, so I've got about 5 sticks in my garage that I'm endeavouring to turn into a staff one day, a long one. So the staff is a kind of a monk's implement, and it's used in many ways, you know, for crossing rivers, for fighting wild animals, and it's very useful. So the hermit holds it up, and he says, so someone comes up, and so here it says he's showing it to the assembly. So there could be a bunch of people here or one person. And says, when the ancients got here, why didn't they stay here? He's just holding up his staff. It's almost like a symbol of enlightenment or something to a certain extent. So why didn't they stay here? And there's no answer from the assembly. And it's kind of, every line in a koan always has something in it, so there's no answer for the assembly. Either usually they might interpret that as no one did want to say anything, might have been a bit of a scary figure, or nobody had a clue. And so he answered for them. Okay, since this you don't know, it's because various translations, but so it has no power for the way is the one that we use, but it has no power for the way. And then he says, so, but after all, what is this all about? And he answered again in their place. He says, with my staff across my shoulder, if it was longer, something like that, I pay no heed to people, I go straight into the myriad peaks. So this, interesting. He says there's got no power for the way. This awakening, this and him being a hermit, you know, living in seclusion by himself, has no power for the way in itself. It has no power, no use. It's quite interesting. It says, you know, all this work we do for awakening, you know, all this awakening experience, it has no power for the way. There's another little commentary here I'd like to read. This is from the commentator who put together this book of koans. So whenever you study and ask questions, there aren't so many things to be concerned with. Concerns arise because outside you perceive that mountains and rivers and the great earth exist. Within, you perceive that seeing, hearing, feeling and knowing exist. Above, you see that there are various Buddhas that can be sought, and below, you see that there are sentient beings who can be saved. What must you do? You must simply spit them all out at once. Afterwards, whether walking, standing, sitting, or lying down 24 hours a day, you must fuse everything into one. Then, though you're on the tip of a hair that's as broad as the universe, though you dwell in a boiling cauldron or in a furnace embers, it's like being in the land of peace and happiness. Though you dwell amidst gems and jewels and profusion, it's like being in a thatched hut. For this kind of thing, if you are a competent adept, you will get to one reality naturally, without wasting any effort. So there has no power for the way. It's quite interesting because the this hermit who's living all by himself basically says after all this work, this experience of awakening, this experience of enlightenment, there's no power for the way. You know, we kind of talk about our practices as being a bit like going up a mountain. You know, we practice, there's a peak that we want to reach. And there's various, guidances and warnings in Zen about when we get to the top of the peak, what do we do? So this is really what this koan is about. What is the hermit pointing out? He has no power for the way. I was reading one commentary on this koan, and the teacher was talking about the me generation. And I think this was back in the 60s. That's right. So we always seem to have a me generation, and we have a me generation now. This aspect of like achieving something for ourselves, achieving something that's just for ourselves, you know. This aspect of doing this practice just for me so I can achieve something and be a certain kind of person. You know, to be satisfied, to be replete, to be peaceful. And the hermit's saying this is of no use in actual life. Holding up this staff. This has no power for the way. And he says, what's the end point? What's it all about? And then he says, with my staff across my shoulders, I head into the myriad peaks. And my teacher Tenshin would say, it's a bit like that you've got this. So how do you carry your staff across your shoulders? How do you carry this awakening across your shoulders? You know, do you do this? Yeah, I'm bloody awakened. Fuck, I'm good. In whatever field it is, whether it's Buddhism or whatever we feel we've accomplished in life. You know, holding it up there as a thing. It has no power. You know, we can see that. You know, sometimes we kind of overstate ourselves and you feel a bit embarrassed, or we see people holding up their attainment. And, so the hermit says it has no power. It has no power to assist others. So that staff across your shoulders, heading into the myriad peaks. And the myriad peaks are really just a word for the life. You know, the myriad peaks of life, they kind of go on and on and on. That, you know, you look into the mountains, the Southern Alps, and the Karoos, and you just see those peaks, blue upon blue. And that's our lives. So that staff across the shoulders is like however it is. Still kind of carrying the staff, but with my staff across my shoulder, I pay no heed to people. I go straight into the myriad peaks. And you think of, I guess, the people you kind of admire, those people either in your own lives or people we come across through, you know, think about the Dalai Lama or Mother Teresa, and those people who kind of carry their wisdom and action, and right action, in a very easy way. You know, and it's and that's really what this koan is around. You know, the staff is your awakening, your wisdom, your practice. But it's really carried lightly across your back, using it at will. You know, to help yourself and others to cross the stream, to drag someone out of a 100-foot well, you know, that kind of thing. It's about engagement, you know, engagement with life. There's anyone heard of the 10 ox herding pictures? So the 10 ox herding pictures are kind of a commentary or a schema of the journey of awakening that starts off with some beautiful paintings that go along with them, various authors, but it kind of starts off with searching for the ox, which is basically where we start off practice, and we're really looking to get a glimpse of this self. And it ends, goes all the way through, you're kind of glimpsing the ox. There's all this kind of like stuff you can relate to in terms of your own practice about the struggle and then a bit of relaxation into life. And it ends, the last one is the 10th stage, it's called entering the marketplace. It says, entering the marketplace, barefoot and unadorned, blissfully smiling though covered with dust and ragged of clothes, using no supernatural power, you bring the withered tree spontaneously to bloom. And so this is the, and it's interesting, in this particular one, it's got the, you won't be able to see from here, so I won't show you, but it's got a painting of this old guy with a sack over his back. It's like Wu Chai or the Laughing Buddha, and there's a kind of a young person in front. So they're kind of like two stages, and this and it's exactly the same painting that's used in the first stage as well. It kind of signifies that journey, but the end of the journey is total ordinariness and kind of returning to the marketplace. Yeah, so here at Sesshin, you know, we've had a number of days, and we are, in some senses, though, gaining strength on the road by practicing like this. You know, and it's, I guess the hermit's, you know, really, really encouraging us to have a bit of a light heart. You know, but the, to practice well as well. It's kind of not saying throw it away and just hang out and drink beer. And then he's heading into the peaks with that staff across his back. You know, I guess I really notice it here during Sesshin. It's really lovely atmosphere that gets created, and everybody, you know, we're practicing, so we've got our staff, you know, but we're feeding each other. You know, we're taking care of the ground. We're taking care of each other with the chanting and the, you know, putting our shoes straight and all those kind of lovely little touches. And passing the cheese to someone who doesn't have the cheese. And it's quite beautiful, actually. And, so that's that, carrying the staff into the myriad peaks with ease. Just really returning, you know, to what is in front of us. Yeah, so one more day. And you just really use this time well. you know, taking care, not turning away from what's in front of us. And we'll just continue for another 24, 30 hours into the myriad peaks.